let's have an AA meeting. My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic.
Lisa.
Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speaker Meeting at NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in this room tonight and listening later on bluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker and will believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. All right, so tonight I have asked Rayshawn to tell his story. I've seen him around for a few years, and I always enjoy him, his sharing, and I see him like talking and fellowshipping with a lot of people that I like in AA, and so give you Rayshawn.
My name is Rayshawn. I'm an alcoholic. Hello, everyone. Let me make sure that I obey the time constraints, because once I get to talking, it's hard to shut me up. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to tell in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like. Well, my story begins on a cold winter night, January the 20th, 1986. 186, which was the day that I was born. I was born at like 8 p.m. at night, so I was a prime time baby. Up in Cleveland, Ohio. Probably it was snowing a lot and probably really cold. But I came into the world, and I lived there in Cleveland with my parents and my brother and sister for the next 2 years, and then our family moved down here to Atlanta, where I've spent pretty much the rest of my life up to this point here. But growing up was it's pretty good. Like, I was taken care of physically. Like, I was clothed. I got to eat on a regular basis. Went to school. Those sorts of things. So I was physically taken care of, but emotionally, I was not well taken care of, and that's just the truth of it. I would say that I don't really think my parents really knew how to care for me in particular, because I was kind of a unique baby. I was pretty energetic, but I was also very sensitive, kind of creative. So, like, I was different from my brother and sister. So, I don't know if they knew how to relate to me and my difference. So, my father yelled at me quite a bit, called me stupid and things of that nature. And my mother could be, at times, a bit physically abusive. See, I didn't know that, like, your parent, like, ripping an extension cord out of the wall and beating you with it because you did something bad was, like, what some might call child abuse. I actually thought it was just, honestly, I thought it was normal. I thought that was just how children were disciplined by their parents. I didn't know that other kids did not have that happen to them until some years later. But, you know, I grew up, I went to school, so I was a pretty, I would say, like, at this point, probably an ordinary kid, although I was always made to feel like I wasn't ordinary. So I think early on in my life, the stage was set for me to want to seek something that gave me relief from, like, feeling different. Because I always felt like the black sheep of my family. I always felt like the black sheep of the world. So, my actual technical first drink was when I was 7. I was with my mom. She was at some gathering, and she had like a glass of wine that I think she probably took two sips off of. And I took a sip off of her wine. So that was my technical first drink. Disgusting. Hated it. So I finished high school, and I went to the Navy. And, well, prior to going to the Navy, I experienced, I would say, my real first drink, that I would consider my first drink. It's when I was 19, so I was a late bloomer in a lot of ways. And it was Old English beer was my first drink. Some Old E, baby. So I drank some Old English beer and smoked some weed. I was sitting, my story does contain a lot of drug use. I would try to stick mostly to alcohol, but it's kind of impossible to tell my story without mentioning some of the extracurricular activities because they were a main part of my downfall. So I drank some Old E, smoked a little green alcohol. I was sitting on my friend's bed. They were playing video games. I started laughing uncontrollably. I felt the need to walk to the grocery store, so I walked to the store, found myself sprinting down the street at full speed. I was loaded. I was high. Like, it was like, you know, somebody had hit the reset button on all things. But, you know, it really didn't grab me at that point in time. Like, it was fun, but it wasn't like that thing that happens. I'm in an alcoholic's drinking life where, like, you're like, this is it right here, that magical moment. So I ended up going to the Navy. I spent 2 years in the Navy. Got really weird and crazy. And I ended up getting out after 2 years because I was on my ship. We were out to sea, and I threatened to, like, off myself. So they sent me back stateside and sent me to some doctors, and the doctor said, oh, this boy's fine. They were going to send me back to my ship. I was like, no, the hell you're not. So I ended up like going UA, which is unattended, for like a night. Showed back up the next morning. Everybody was like, where were you last night? We came to pick you up. I was like, ooh. So I was really, boy, you think I'm crazy today. When I was 21, I was absolutely certifiably, like, I should not have been in the regular world kind of crazy. I had no respect or desire for authority in my life, because the first authoritarians in my life were my parents, and they abused their authority quite awfully at times. So I think unconsciously I developed kind of a thing in myself that I would never have somebody have authority over me ever again. No one would ever rule over me ever again. So, you know, I made that kind of a law in my life. So I got out of the Navy. After leaving the Navy, I went to music school because I played guitar. It was there when I was in music school that moment happened. I was getting a ride home from a guy I knew in class. He actually was taking me to the Chamblee train station. When I get in the car, a couple other guys pile in the car. They start rolling some of that green alcohol up in the front. And it came around to me, and I was like, I've done this before. It's no big deal. So I indulge. And we get to riding down the highway headed towards the Chamblee station, and we're listening to Mars Volta. I don't even like Mars Volta, but that particular night, Mars Volta was amazing. And by the time I got on the train, I was like, this is it. I want to feel this and experience this as much as I can. So that was my thing. I set out to experience that as often as I could. I met a friend of mine. His name was Kiwan. We remained friends for quite a long time. I met him in music school, and we were, you know, green alcohol using buddies. We did that often. We listened to a lot of music, played guitar, and, you know, indulged in that kind of stuff. Needless to say, my poor study habits caught up with me. I was ousted from music school. But Kiwan and I and, you know, some other people started a band. We started playing music. And there was a season of my drinking and using that was manageable, where things were fun. But it progressed pretty quickly. My drinking progressed very rapidly. Everything began to get out of, like, some people are able to drink for like 20 years and whatever. That was not my story. From the time I started to the time I got sober was actually a 9-year period. From my first, that old English beer, to the day I got sober, 9 years. That's how long it lasted. And a lot happened in those 9 years. So, it's about 2010. I was living with my mom at the time, and I pawned some DVDs of hers to, like, buy some green alcohol and go to the VA. So if anybody tells you that you can't get weird just by smoking marijuana, that is not true. You can totally be weird. Needless to say, my mom told me I couldn't live with her anymore. So I went to the Atlanta Union Mission and woke up the morning of January 20th, 2010, which was my 24th birthday at the time. And I told them what was, you know, like, and they asked me, do you have any drug and alcohol problems? And I was like, yeah, you know. I didn't know what else to say. That was more, I think that was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself in that moment. But they ended up sending me to the VA. So I got in with a VA program at it's downtown on Pryor Street. Gateway was where I was staying. This was 2010. And it was my first introduction to 12-step meetings. And I went to my first meeting at a place called the Leroy Daniels Center. It was on Columbia Drive at the time. And they were getting ready to move to where they are currently located, which is on Covington Highway. And I remember, like, I don't remember anything anybody said during my first meeting, but what I do remember is at the end of the meeting, they asked, if anybody's here for your first time, you know, come get this white key tag. And the guy that I was with, his name is Lamar, but we called him Bone. Bone, like, you know, motioned to me to get up and go get a white key tag. So I get up and go up to the front. The meeting, like, erupts into, like, celebration. People start clapping, cheering, fist pumping. Woo! I'm just like, I don't know why y'all are so excited that I'm here. Like, this is not actually a glorious moment. Like, good job. You've ruined your life. Good for you. That was not, you know, like, I was not feeling it. But I got in, I sat down, and I was like, okay, this is cool, I guess. And that started a journey that lasted 4.5 years of me coming in and out, in and out, in and out. And it wasn't really like in and out. It wasn't like I ever really like stayed sober for any significant time. And that 4.5 year period, 63 days was the longest I stayed without alcohol or anything in my system. I went to various treatment centers and halfway houses and places like that. And I would always end up drinking and using again. And I want to say, you fast forward the clock about 2013. I was hanging out with Kiwan, another friend of ours, and we were doing what we usually did. We were drinking and, you know, some beer and some green alcohol. This other friend of ours pulled out this bag with this white stuff in it. This white stuff has a name called cocaine. Yeah. They asked me if I wanted some. And, you know, I'm like Mikey, you know, from the cereal. Like, I'll do it. I'll try anything, you know. And, like, Mikey, he likes it. And I was like, man, this is cool. This is it right here. The magical cocktail for life. Alcohol, green alcohol, and this powdery, glittery substance, you know, that you drink up your nose. And I started doing that a lot. And, like, just to give you, like, a kind of a, like, how my life was. Like, my life, like, for the majority of my adulthood up till the time I got sober, barring the time that I spent in the Navy, like, I would have, like, a McDonald's job or, like, I worked at Arby's for a little bit and had a couple other jobs, maybe for a few months. But they never lasted. And I was never accountable. Sometimes I, you know, would go through stretches where I was kind of accountable. But I did really strange stuff. There was a coworker of mine when I worked at a Subway, who, like, he robbed the place while I was working. He was laying in the back room on the floor, and, like, when I closed, he was like, I'm going to take the money, and, like, I guess 5 minutes after, call the cops and, like, let them know that, like, somebody came and robbed the place. And I was like, And, like, I was so, like, weird and crazy that I had no real, like, understanding or comprehension that I could have went to prison for a long time, like, being an accomplice to a robbery. Like, I just didn't have the ability to, like, understand anything. I was so disconnected from the world around me. I was so disconnected from reality. And alcohol was the only thing that made me feel like I was sort of connected. Yeah, I felt like I could talk to people, like I could be, you know, in my own skin and be relatively comfortable and whatnot. But it was, I was not like a functioning person. Not at all. I needed some type of anesthetic to, like, get through life. So once the white powdery stuff started happening in my life, things wrapped up pretty quickly after that. I started experiencing a lot of odd consequences. Like, I would end up on places like Jonesboro Road with, like, hanging out in, like, abandoned houses with weird people, doing weird stuff. Yeah, I was finding myself going to, like, strange places, like, looking for a girlfriend for the night that I could hang out with and be weird with while I was juiced up on the white powdery stuff. Yeah, use your imagination on that. My life was pretty crazy. It was very insane. The person you see today who looks like he, I guess, I was not that guy. So fast forward the clock to June 2014. I went to the Salvation Army, like, back in May. Ended up leaving after, like, 3 weeks. Drank again. Was homeless again. I was a chronic homeless person. Raise your hand if you like to live outdoors when you drink. Yeah, only a couple, only a few people was an urban camper. That was my thing. I like to live outside when I drink. That's called being homeless. There was another clubhouse that I used to go to quite a bit. I still do sometimes, called the Triangle Club. And there's a U-Haul place right by the Triangle Club, and I used to sleep in those U-Haul trucks at night. I would leave the 10 o'clock meeting and go crawl in one of those trucks, and I'd have a sleeping bag and a blanket, and that was like my life. So after I left the Salvation Army in June of 2014, I was homeless again. My life was crazy, as usual, and I went to, I think it was like a 5:45, it was a 4 o'clock or 5:45 meeting at Triangle. I think it was a 5:45, if I remember correctly, but it doesn't matter. What matters is what happened after that meeting. I saw a guy that I'd seen around for a few years prior to that. I'll go to meetings at Triangle a lot. I would come here. I frequent the 1:30 meeting. I'd say a lot of weird, crazy stuff in the meeting. But people tolerated me, which was one of the things that I always felt every time I came to an AA meeting, is that people were, happy that I was there, and they seemed like they genuinely wanted me to come back, which was an experience that I didn't have often places that I went. Like, I would go to my mom's house, my own mother, who birthed me, and she was not willing to allow me to come up in her house. Like, I would knock on the door, and I'd hear a voice yell through the other end, "Who is it, and what do you want?" That's the kind of stuff that would happen to me. Now I'm a welcome guest at my mother's house. My mother has entrusted me with a lot of things, and my relationship with her is 180 degrees different than what it was before I got sober. But, so I'm at the Triangle Club after this meeting. I see this guy that I'd seen for a few years prior. He asked me how I'm doing. I used to speak all the time with an outside voice, if anybody knows. So I yelled all the time when I talked. I didn't have the ability to speak with an inside voice. So I probably was yelling at him. He was like, ooh. And I remember him asking me a question that, God willing, I'll never forget. He was like, hey, what experience do you have working the seventh step with the sponsor? Because we had left out of a seventh step meeting. And just to give you a little bit of insight into how I was in AA meetings, I would sit up front in the very front row in every AA meeting that I went to. And usually I would have my life recovery Bible with me. And I'd be reading my recovery Bible, during the meeting. And especially if it was on a step two, step three meeting, I'd shoot my hand in the air and basically argue with the meeting of how stupid you guys were about this whole, God as we understand him thing. Jesus is the only God, and if you don't believe in Jesus, you suck. Was kind of my tone at times. There was a solution for that also, but I'll get to that. So after he asked me that question, I was like, And I fumbled around with some stuff. He was like, do you have a sponsor? I was like, well, no. He was like, oh, so you're sponsoring yourself. That means you have a dumbass for a sponsor. And I was like, I was intrigued, though. And we talked a little bit more, and I fumbled around, and he was like, listen, what are you asking? Because I was hinting around this sponsorship thing. He was like, what are you asking? Are you asking someone to sponsor you? And it was him and another guy, Steve, that was sitting out there. And, Steve was just like, don't look at me. I've already been down that road. I'm not doing it. And I was like, what are you guys sponsoring me? And he kind of sighed, and he was like, oh, God, I'll do it. And he's been my sponsor ever since that time. But I remember him asking me a question right after he agreed. He was like, well, let me ask you something. First, are you done? And I was like, well, I sure hope I'm done. He's like, no. He used some expletives because I know this is being recorded, so I'm going to try to use clean language. He said some things to me about, forget all of that. I think, I hope. Are you done? That's a yes or no question. I was like, yeah, I'm done. He's like, well, are you willing to go to any length to stay that way? Yeah, I'm willing to go to any length. And I said that, not knowing that, like, somewhere deep inside of me, that was actually true. That I was done. I did want to be done. And I was willing to go to any length to get done. So, we started going, you know, he gave me a few assignments to do. It was a few days after that, June 11th, 2014, it was about 4 o'clock that evening. Well, early that morning, I went to my mom's house to go and wash some clothes. And about 4 o'clock, and while I was on my way to wash some clothes, I found a bag of that green alcohol that I like to smoke set on fire. I never found that kind of stuff while actively participating. And it's just like, as soon as I'm trying to get sober, it's like, there it is. So I pick it up, put it in my pocket, and I carry it around with me all day. So I called my sponsor around 4 o'clock that afternoon, and I was like, man, I found this stuff. I want to do it. I don't. He was like, well, if you want to use it, go ahead. I can't stop you. I'm not going to try. But let me ask you something. Are you done? There's that question again. And I asked him a question that I'd never asked anybody before. I said, how do I know if I'm done? I don't know. It was an honest answer. What does it look like? I don't know. He's like, well, that's a good question. There's two things you can do. You can drink some more and see if you're done that way. Or you can give these steps a try and see what happens. Needless to say, I smoked some of that green alcohol that night. I went to the Atlanta Baptist Rescue Mission, took a shower, got something to eat, and went back to the Triangle Club. And while I was on my way, I used some of it. And I had a little bit left, and I get to Triangle, and I'm going up, you know, towards the building. And I'm like, man, somebody's going to smell this on me. Somebody's going to confront me. This is going to be weird. I got to get rid of it. So I take the rest of it out of my pocket, and I throw it in the trash can. And from that moment to this very moment, that was the last time that I put any type of drugs and alcohol into my body. It wasn't necessarily the plan. It wasn't something that I had like this, you know, moment, but it's just what happened. So I went inside, went downstairs, and started working on an assignment that my sponsor had given me. It's actually what I did. He had me finding all the must in the big book. So I went downstairs in the downstairs room and started looking for must in the big book. It's a weird thing. Ha! That's weird, huh? But I think what it showed is even subconsciously there was a desire to go to any length to stay sober. I just couldn't stay sober on my own power. But I wanted to, because I wanted the tragedy and pain and destruction of my life to stop. I didn't really consciously know that. I've lived a lot of my life unconscious, which is something that AA has given me the ability to be, is conscious. In the 11th step, it talks about a conscious thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. I always had an unconscious contact with God. God was always with me. He was always doing stuff in my world, but I was just unconscious to it. So about a week after that, I ended up going to St. Jude's. And I spent the next 6 months in St. Jude's. And about 2 months into St. Jude's, I wanted to drink again. And my roommate came, and because I had went downstairs and got my suitcase and stuff to come up and pack all my stuff up. And I had to pass by the kitchen, which they were holding a meeting in. So he ran up the stairs after me and came in the room and was like, I know what it is. It's terrible. And I know you want to go drink again. Here's my number. He gave me a hug and he left out. And as he's leaving, two other guys are busting through the door. And they're, like, pleading with me to stay, trying to persuade me. And this one guy says, if you go and drink again, you're going to see everybody's face in here, and it's going to ruin it. And I was like, oh man, he's right. Because when I had left the Salvation Army, that was absolutely my experience. That I saw everybody's face as I was drinking and using that night. And it did ruin it. It was not as fun as it usually would be. So I sat down on the bed. And I was like, you know what, you're right. So I unpacked my stuff, took my suitcase back downstairs, and I stayed. And about a few days after that, I was sitting on my bed one morning reading a part of the book that my sponsor had me read, pages 84 to 88, every morning that I woke up and every night before going to bed. And I remember as I was reading, I stopped. I put my book down. And I remember saying to myself, and I may have said it out loud, I don't want to get high anymore. And the obsession to drink was lifted in that moment. Or at least I recognized it was gone. And it hasn't returned since then. It's been over 7 years now. So, I continue to work through the steps. And there's a part in the book, and there's a solution. And this is what happened in that moment. I didn't know this, but this is actually what happened. It says, there's a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for a successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. It's in that moment, sitting on my bed in St. Jude's, I became convinced of the hopelessness and futility of life as I've been living it. I experienced step one, that I fully admitted that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. And that I knew that my life would never be any more than what it was in that moment if I didn't stop. So from that time on, I plunged myself fully into the steps. And I met with my sponsor like every week. We read through the book. Sometimes we get into debates about certain things. I remember we started debating in step two about the whole God thing, because I was still hung up on Jesus the God. And how do I, like, get all this people don't believe as I believe? Blah, 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 blah. And he asked me a question. He was like, well, let me ask you something. Because he likes to ask questions. He has pretty good questions. How's all your knowledge of theology in the Bible helping you with your drug and alcohol problem? Mm-hmm. I was like, I guess it's not. He's like, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we get into these steps? And these steps will give you a better connection which you already came in with. I was like, okay, I guess I'll do that. I can do that. So, it may have been that night. I remember going home, and I remember as I was doing my nightly prayer, I was on my knees, and I remember praying like, God, I'm not abandoning you. I'm not like throwing like Christianity away or anything like that. I just need to put my Bible down for a second and like get into the 12 steps in AA, because I need to stop like drinking and getting high. At least I'll die. And I'll be coming to see you early. So like, don't like lightning bolt me or anything like that. Pretty sure God was like, you know, falling down laughing, just like, ha 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 ha, silly boy. So I started working the steps, and you know, I left St. Jude's eventually and went to the transition house, spent like a year there, got out, got my own place with a guy from my church, got a job, started working, and my life started getting better. But I noticed something. It was about maybe like 2 years sober, is that my life was still very, very unmanageable. Like, I could not keep a job for like any more than like maybe 6 months or so. I still found myself like cursing like my managers and stuff out at work. I remember calling my sponsor on many occasions talking about, man, I cussed my boss out today. I told him himself, and he was like, yeah, you should probably make amends to that and never do that again. I was like, don't know if I can promise I'll never do it again. My life was just very unmanageable still. I found myself still, like, I would call my sponsor because I was riding MARTA at the time, and I would have these episodes riding MARTA. He's over there, like, just leaning back, like, oh, God, I don't miss those days. Calling him, like, when I'm talking about screaming, I mean screaming at the top, tip top of my screaming voice, like, about me missing the train. Like, I got off the bus, I got down into the train station, and the train was leaving right as I got, like, up to the thing. And, like, I was kicking trash cans in half and cursing in the middle of, like, the train station. People were, like, walking to the other end of the station. Yeah, I was still very crazy, to say the least. And if it hadn't have been for, like, continuing to come to meetings and continuing to work with my sponsor, I don't know if I would have drank, but it might be a good chance I might have, like, offed somebody or myself in the process. So over the past, you know, few years, over the past year, I would say, because I got a few minutes left, so I want to talk about some things that have recently happened in my life. It was about this time, late July last year, I met this young lady from my church. We formed a liking to one another. We started dating. Everything was running very well. Back in March, we got engaged to be married. Everything was cool. And some other issues in my life. Drugs and alcohol was not the only things that I've ever been addicted to. I will become addicted to anything, actually, that makes me feel good or different. But some other issues have been rearing their ugly head in my life, and needless to say, it made my relationship with her fall apart. I am not married. I am no longer engaged. We are still friends, so that's good. I didn't completely destroy it. But I remember calling my sponsor, and I am not a crier. I don't really cry. It takes a whole lot to make me cry. That was the closest I've ever been to, like, crying about something. I was incredibly hurt and, like, saddened by this. I remember, like, as the days went by, like, after my breakup with her, the obsession to drink didn't really come back, but I felt the cloud of alcohol, like, kind of on my back. And I remember I went to the 10 o'clock meeting at Clarkston. I come back from the meeting. I was on my way back home from the meeting, and I was riding on the bus, and this brilliant idea came to my mind. I was like, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. Maybe I just got some other stuff that's wrong with me. Like, I know that I can't do the powdered version of alcohol. That absolutely ruined my life. But maybe I can still, like, be able to handle a beer or two or whatever the case may be. And the more I thought about it, the more it started to make good sense. So I get on the number 2, and I ride over to Ponce and Boulevard, where I get off at, and I was walking down. I get off the bus, and there's a Circle K right there by Ponce and Boulevard. And I look over at the Circle K, and I was like, I could go in there, get a PBR, go home, drink it, and take the edge off. If it had not been for the work that I've put in the past 7 years, I absolutely would have drank in that moment. Absolutely. Have no doubt about it. But suddenly the thought came, maybe you should call somebody and tell them about it before you do this. Maybe you should wait till tomorrow. Call somebody, run it past somebody else, see what happens. Luckily, I was able to do it. I don't think it was luck. By grace, I was able to do it. Because it was not because I'm so strong and smart. So I called a friend of mine that morning who'd been sober for a long time. And I talked to him about it the next morning. And he was like, perhaps you might be right. And I thought, like, maybe I should call my sponsor. And I was like, no, I don't want to call him because he's totally going to say something stupid. And, like, I'm going to get pissed and it's going to, like, drive me out of my mind. I don't know if that's actually true or not because a lot of times I think that things are going to happen that don't actually happen the way I think they are. So I called another friend of mine. I was like, I'll call that guy. And he answered the phone, finally. And I told him about what was going on, about this brilliant idea that I had. And I can't do his voice, but I'll try to do the best I can. He was like, Rayshon, you're in relapse mode. And I was like, what do you mean I'm in relapse mode? That's ridiculous. He was like, given the traumatic circumstances that you've been going through, it makes sense. You know? But if you drink again, I'm not going to carry your black ass. I was like, all right, man, whatever. So it was Thursday. It was a Thursday night. So I know that they had the Thursday night men's meeting here. So I came to the Thursday night men's meeting. I was sitting over here. And maybe like halfway through the meeting, I reconnected with step one. And I was like, man, I was insane. There's no way I was going to go and just drink a PBR and, like, not go to the store, get more beer, and not eventually go to Thomasville looking for what I really like. There's no way. I'm not one of these people. I don't know. I never really know anything. But given what my drinking was like when I stopped and the fact that it has progressed, so my body is still, the allergy in my body is 7 years advanced from what it was when I stopped. If anybody knew me when I stopped, 7 years of advancement is a lot. I probably would no longer be alive if I had gone to that Circle K and drank that PBR. There's a good chance. But here I am. And my time is almost up, so I wanted to say this in closing. If anybody in here is new, staying sober has been the greatest gift in my life. AA has been the greatest thing that God has given me, other than Jesus himself. I can't imagine my life without being here in AA. I can't imagine my life without being sober anymore. There was a time that I couldn't imagine my life without drinking. Now I can't imagine my life if I ever drank again, like what that would be like. And I never want to experience that ever again. I just want to, like, I remember saying this when I was in a meeting on like 90 days. Man, I just want to experience different levels of suck. But I don't want to experience that suck ever again. And my life is completely different today. So if you're in here and you're new, give this deal a shot because it really is worth it. It might seem weird. It might be challenging at times. It might suck. I was in treatment before, you know, somebody held a pack of crackers in their bed, you know, mattress, and we all would get put on lockdown. I call my sponsor pissed, you know, these SOBs, you know, like, it was terrible. But it was worth going through it because my life is 180 degrees different today. And there's a whole lot more that I could say, which, God willing, I'll get the opportunity. I just won't do it now. Thanks for letting me share.
You've been sleeping in a field. Misfits are everywhere. La la.